Hello and welcome to the Poorly Informed Podcast. I am your host for this episode, Max, and I'm here with the usual suspects, Will, Peter and Theo. This week we will be discussing the impact of religion upon history, whether it's had an overall positive or negative effect. And yeah, I think that's probably about it, so let's get right into it. I'll do the usual, you know, go around, summarise everyone's points. So Theo, what do you think?
I'm saying that religion has had a largely good impact throughout history, a largely positive impact throughout history. The other two making faces at me as I speak. So a lot of this is down to my personal beliefs as a Christian. I also like being contrary. A lot of people think religion has been bad through history, so I want to prove that view wrong or challenge it today.
Okay, Peter, what about you?
I'm going for the edgy 14-year-old atheist point of view of religion's only, essentially, had a detrimental effect on history. It's been a major draw on everything it's touched.
Okay, cool. And Will, finally.
I'm of the position that religion has done both good and bad, but net probably just about bad. I think that's what I've settled on.
We sound so nice at the start, and then we're going to be, like, yelling at each other in about 5 minutes.
I hear something strangled in the back of this, so I apologise.
And I'm your host, so I'm going to be impartial, but as we all know, that's not going to last very long. So we'll just see. I'll probably be on the side of it's had a vaguely positive impact when I decide to eventually, you know, throw being impartial and, you know, moderate completely out of the way. So, let's get started. So, Peter, because you're a 4chan edgelord, why has it only had a negative effect? What negative events and sort of impact?
I feel like if you draw a Venn diagram of anti-intellectualism, so if you have anti-vaxxers, flat earthers, people who deny that we've gone to the moon, people who deny climate change, you draw all them in a Venn diagram, the thing right in the middle is religion.
Wait, what? That's not how Venn diagrams work.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
What if they...
Where all four of them intersect, they're all linked by the common thread.
Oh, I'm an anti-Venn diagramist.
here we go. Another podcast on the merits of Venn diagrams.
Sorry, my bad.
And I'd say that religion, in its current form, promotes anti-intellectualism, and now more than ever, anti-intellectualism is possibly the biggest threat to history. But this was true in the past as well. Religion's always essentially been anti... It's always been a conservative movement. It's always been a conservative organisation that's promoted anti-intellectualism. And that has harmed, like, mankind's progress. It's slowed us down, and just for that reason, it's a large negative on the world.
But is that really? Is it true? Has it been, anti-intellectualism throughout history? Because surely back in the day, monks—they were all the people writing about history, you know, theology and stuff.
Tell that to Galileo. What happened to him? Didn't he get killed by the church for saying that the Earth goes around the sun?
He might have been.
He may
However,
have been.
Lots of other stuff. They've also been, you know,
Didn't the early church breed modern intellectualism in setting up state schools, which then, like, cathedral schools, which eventually turned into universities?
The church was the only place where people knew how to write, so it couldn't appear anywhere else.
They held a monopoly on information.
Ah, my bad.
Which
Sorry.
They kept to themselves, and they...
They kept to themselves.
They disseminated it. To who they wanted to.
Well, yeah,
they controlled information.
They disseminated it to the very intelligent people capable of learning.
No, not necessarily.
Because you don't have a population that's geared up towards becoming middle class educated people. So you can only take on so many people who are really willing
and
to
take
learn.
On the rich ones or the ones who offer to become part of the church.
You're not
going to
take on a peasant from rural Italy, are you? Because they're not going to.
And surely it doesn't matter who they take on, so long as they are taking on and educating people and promoting intellectualism.
But they were the only people who ran schools.
Yeah, and?
Which is bad. Everyone should be other schools.
Just because they're the only people doesn't discredit the fact that they've done it. Just because they may be excluding or focusing on a certain demographic doesn't discredit the fact that they are still providing education to people. And, like, yes, more people, like, you know, more organisations should have been doing it, and over time that did happen. It's just we're just saying that back in the day, the initial basis for an education system was upon religion.
Yes.
Such as in... Sorry, I didn't interrupt you as soon as you started talking next, it was funny. So, Islam as well, you know, I feel like this podcast is probably going to be pretty Christian-centric.
I've done some... Islam as well, in the Abbasid Caliphate, when Islam... In the Islamic...
Caliphate?
The Abbasid Caliphate?
Abbasid, I think.
Abbasid, sorry. Petty. When the Abbasid Caliphate was a Muslim empire that stretched from the Middle East to North Africa, you had, for instance, the Baghdad House of Wisdom, which is, depending on sources you believe, a massive library or academy where intellectualism was sponsored and driven by religion, which attracted Christian scholars as well, who traded works by Plato and Aristotle. You had the spread of cultural... You had the spread of science and astronomy. It was a time of scientific discovery and energy and power. From the 8th century to the 14th century.
That's longer than I thought.
And anyway, even if it didn't last very long, that it still had a positive impact.
But the issue I take with some of these is it necessarily motivated by religion? Because a lot of scientists are religious. No one can deny that. Many, many scientists are, because people at the time are. Everyone is, so of course they're going to be. And whether these religious institutions systemically fostered this is slightly different from them purposely pushing as a basic tenet of
the fact that Islam encouraged the expansion of the caliphate and turned it into and then when the caliphate was established, Muhammad encouraged the positive treatment of followers. You know, I believe you're allowed to still practice your Christianity Christianity and Judaism under the caliphate, which was...
You did have to pay extra taxes.
Are you going to let me finish?
Sorry.
So their freedom was directly a result of Islam's behaviour, which you wouldn't necessarily get in another empire. This then led to greater cultural exchange and challenges, which influenced the Islamic Golden Age.
But then that's something that a lot of empires have done. I mean, take the Roman Empire was relatively hands-off with religions. What they essentially...
After a certain point.
Of
being very hands-on.
Well, it depends. All they really demanded, which for many people was a problem, for many other people was not, was that you worship the emperor. And because people worship many, many gods, often in the early stages at least, they just add one more. And as long as they worship the emperor, it doesn't matter. You can do whatever else you want.
You know what thrived under the Roman Empire? Christianity. Because it was a force for change, contrasting with the stagnation and the brutality of the Roman Empire. The early church had democratic elections. It had the dividing of property and wealth, which I know Will would empathise with as a socialist. It had freedom of speech. It had freedom of discussion. You had these energetic, young... Christians working with each other to develop a free society and to challenge an oppressive culture within the Roman Empire. And to some extent, they did that. Constantine the Great credits his victory over Rome to being a Christian when he overthrew the Roman Empire and established himself as ruler of it and then moved the capital city to Constantinople.
I mean, no, it just seems like it's drifted very far away from the anti-intellectualism that I was talking about.
Well, yeah, that's how this podcast works.
It is how it's
how often do we ever stay on topic?
However, I really wanted to stay on topic because I have a very good personal anecdote here about religion and anti...
Okay, because personal anecdotes show everything, yeah.
My granddad was a lecturer for universities, and I believe he did surveying and history stuff. And he was lecturing in Persia just before the Islamic Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Islamic Revolution happened, he was arrested for being a foreign intellectual. Lots of intellectuals got arrested. Lots of intellectuals didn't manage to get back to their own countries for a year. So my granddad was stuck in Persia/Iran for a year because he was an intellectual. And they saw intellectuals as a damaging force in society.
So you're saying because a hardline elite group of Islamic fundamentalists in the form of the Revolutionary Guard Corps, that means that religion throughout history has been bad?
But I admit personal anecdotes have a problem, but that's one example that like has personally affected me. Then in America,
it didn't personally affect you. You're fine.
But no, but it
you weren't alive at the time.
But it affected my granddad.
Yeah, but that didn't
my
personally
granddad,
affect you.
He's like, okay, sure. Also, in America, the Republican Party is tantamount denying climate change.
Right. Yeah.
They do this almost entirely. Or we base it lots of this for religious reasons.
The climate change lobby is the main reason they do it because fuel and as I'm sure Will would like to put, you know quite a lot about this. Would you argue that the fossil fuel firms and so on have spent a lot of money lobbying to push the Republicans to deny climate change or to ignore
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely, I think when you look at the causes of it, I would 99% is financial because there is no reason to. like the religious arguments against climate change.
I didn't realize there were religious arguments.
They're
pretty flimsy.
There are, but they seem to be mostly premised on we don't like climate change, therefore we need to justify it. What I would say religion has done, it is a fairly convenient cover, because they can say, and because, I mean, the US right wing has this massive, has to appeal to this massive, quite fundamentalist Christian dynamic, that it is one of the larger voter bases in the country. So they can package this argument. They are only making it for financial reasons, but they can make it acceptable to a population by covering it in a sort of a religious packaging that says things like, well, God gave us power over the... I'm sorry, I'm going to horrendously misquote something, but God gave us the power over the world. This is ours to do with how we decide.
Or God will sort it out.
Or it's just bringing the end of days kind of thing, depending on how fundamental.
I mean, also, what you're talking about actually happened in reverse. The Republicans took on the climate change issue because they were in opposition when climate change became a big deal. And then because they made ignoring climate change a party thing, their supporters have then made climate change a party thing. It's not the supporters first, then the party took it on. It was the lobbyists who persuaded the party who influenced their supporters to take on climate change.
But what I would say is, what one of the things they can use to influence the supporters is this religious angle. I don't think it's the cause, but I think it's an angle they can use.
Okay, I mean, if religion wasn't a thing, they'd probably just use another justification for
it. Yeah, there is the whole justification about, you know, jobs and industry that, you know, are supposedly going to be damaged because of move towards greener energy. So, I think as Thea was saying, it is just one of the tools that they could use, which I suppose is an argument against it, because, you know, it's a sort of tool or a belief system which you can manipulate to make people think what you want.
I mean, this was sort of central to my argument, because when I originally went into this, I was like, okay, I'll be the edgy 14-year-old. Because I was that edgy 14-year-old once. I was the anti-religion. Yep, Theo still remembers.
I think we all were, apart from Theo.
But
Theo on the edges, like...
But the more I looked into it, it seems like religion plays this very important role in human development, and it has throughout society. Like, if we look back to, like, the times when we were living in caves and stuff, if you believe in something, you are generally happy, you have confidence, because irrelevant of whether it is true or not, that doesn't matter, that's not the question. You can be confident that what you are seeing is right or wrong. This sort of has all gone through human history, and religion is one of those things that when you think of like a state, if you think of, say, a nation state as they first sort of started, it was a government and it was a church, and these two pillars had to work together in order for this state to succeed. But it means both have to be brutal, and or both have to be sort of... When a state is bad, we all think of states, these can be good or bad, they're not necessarily all good, they're not necessarily all bad.
Yeah.
For me, I view religion as very much the same way. It is a tool, it's a systemic tool that can go either way, and it really depends on how people use it.
Yeah, I'd like to bring back to what you said a minute ago about how it led to people being happier. And even in modern days, there are some studies that show that people who are religious and sort of quite devoutly religious, so, you know, go to church every Sunday, that's my criteria for being devout, apparently, that they generally experience lower rates of depression, lower rates of drug use, you know, are generally happier. And although that study is, you know, it's dubious because, you know, people who are depressed will often lose faith, which, you know, skews the numbers, but there's still the general idea that those people who have faith in a higher power can be happier, and it can help some people to overcome trauma in their lives.
What I found with this, because I was also looking at studies like this, and it had a slightly less effective, like the effect was slightly less in countries like Sweden, for instance, where it's less religious, it's more secular, and generally the standard of living is very high. Whereas if you look somewhere like the US, where inequality is quite high and there's a quite large fundamental Christian sort of demographic, then you see the disparities much bigger.
I'd say that's fairly reasonable. I would argue from personal experience, but obviously as we've seen with Peter, that's a pretty flawed way to argue, but to carry the point. But I would say that I can see very clearly why churches would, or why religion would improve happiness. I've heard it said that you know, over half of under fours go to toddler groups at churches, and that churches provide 9/10 of community buildings and social buildings in communities. Obviously, we live in the South. There's money flowing around for halls and so on. but in more deprived areas, a church may be the only hub that a community has, and that makes it really, really important. And it makes it a hub of the, whether you're religious or not, it makes it a hub of the community, and it makes it a place where people can come, meet other people, go to toddler groups, go to baking groups, go to coffee morning on Thursdays, and so on and so on. And I think that church, while we're looking at the big picture here, church has been, definitely in the last century or so, a massive deal for small community.
Can I move away from that topic? Because I agree with you and I don't want
to... Okay, well then can I say something to refute that just for
a
second?
Yeah, good.
I would say that, yes, the church is the centre point, but it's the centre point because it's a community centre, not necessarily because it's a religious centre. In the modern, I don't disagree with you 100 years ago, but now... where I think the majority of this country is non-religious,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
It's 50-something percent now. Community centres are important because they're community centres. It's irrelevant of whether they're religious or not.
No, but churches provide community centres often very cheaply or free of charge.
Yeah, I agree, but that isn't necessarily... that the religion doesn't come into...
Well, no, the reason why they're often cheap or free of charge is because they're religious buildings.
And also,
if they're community buildings, the council or whoever runs them might seek to make a profit or charge higher prices. The reason they're so accessible is because they're run by churches or by mosques or temples or so on.
But a community centre run by the community for the community, which is kind of what a church is in many cases, would also do the same thing.
Right? However, there's very little motivation to create one of... like, you know, there's no... There's low motivation to create a community centre privately, whereas a church does have that motivation to create a place of worship which can then be used by the community.
Plus, the church will self-fund people whose jobs it is to make community events happen and to bring people together to those places. If it was funded by the community, which is obviously cool in itself, you're less likely to have that organised coherence. It's more likely just to be used for sports some evenings and maybe the occasional social event. Whereas the church I go to, there's like, what, 5 events happening each day throughout these various buildings, more on the weekends, because there are people who are responsible for organising everything and making sure that you can ring up and book a time and, you know, have a party of 200 people there.
Well, yes, maybe, however, but the Crusades...
I mean, you brought this up when we're talking about the
Middle
East.
We were all sort of waiting for it.
Not just the Crusades. Also, the Islamic Wars of Conquest. Also, the 30 Years' War. Probably the 12 Years' War. Probably every single major conflict has a religious element to it. Talk about the catchphrase of the Crusades. Deus levolt. Does anyone here know Latin? This is translates to...
My name's Peter, I'm pretentious.
God wills it.
Right.
Religiously motivated, for literally no reason whatsoever, we just decided to go and kill a bunch of people.
I mean, I'm sure there were private motives for it, such as, you know, to get, you know,
Didn't the Knights Templars go to be hospitable and then they ended up just becoming some of the richest people in the entire region?
Lots wanted to be rich. Lots, you could argue the Pope wanted to unify Europe more, which he kind of succeeded. We unified by, like, fighting lots of people. The Wendish Crusades were against the pagans in Northern Europe, and we killed them all or converted them. As your choices, convert or death. And with Muslims, because they technically worship the same God, it was just leave our land or die. Leave the land that we want or die. And then, like, for example, the Islamic Wars of Conquest, they were pretty brutal. For hundreds of years, they just expanded in every direction, killing and converting. Then you have almost all colonial expansion was justified with a religious element. They were civilizing.
I don't quite understand what you're trying to do by listing. Are you trying to get me to
These
are heavily provocative.
I'm saying that these are bad things.
No, I think we get the impression. I'm not going to say, hold on a minute, revisionist history, the Crusades were actually really good.
No, no one is. And no one can say it because they are bad things. Caused by religion, which have led to the deaths of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. And that, in my book, is a big tick on the tally mark of the bad side.
True. However, as you said earlier, you said religiously justified. They were not only caused by religion. There are obviously lots of other, you know, causes such as... I don't know.
The Islamic conquest was fully caused by religion.
But surely there's not
the
desire to expansion.
Wasn't the invasion of the Turks a leading reason as to why the Crusades happened? And wasn't there quite a legitimate fear, as you mentioned, Islamic world conquest, wasn't there quite a legitimate fear that the lives of the Christians in the region could be at risk.
The first crusade was started by one of the popes. He saw the chance to reunify Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy. And he saw that because the Eastern Roman Empire said, can you help us because we're being invaded by the Turks? And then the Pope was like, maybe I can reunify this religion and get myself personally have more authority. Yes, let's go and help and let's make it a religious war. The Turks may have invaded, they would have invaded without being religious. That doesn't, that's not what we're talking about here.
No, because you're just ignoring other causes just because it helps your argument that they were religiously motivated, such as an event that I've spent too much time looking at.
I was doing some research and I thought this guy was talking real legit stuff about the Crusades. Yeah. And then he just finishes saying, has the Crusades not taken place, the entire Western world might have been under subjugation to Islam today.
Yeah, I found out during all my research for this.
No.
Every article was just by some American religious evangelical who was like, without religion, people are like Satan worshippers.
Well, the problem is that West self-criticism and secularism means there's not that many good resources on, or looking at Christianity through history from a neutral or positive viewpoint. It's hard to research.
It's always really positive or really negative. Anyway,
it's not like it's either really positive but terribly sourced. Really negative.
But what I was saying about an event which is, I was going to say close to my heart, it's not. The Crimean War, 1853. The primary cause, inverted commas, of the Crimean War was to do with the Eastern Orthodoxy and the Christians in that area being discriminated. Basically, the Russians wanted sort of authority over Christians in Turkey, and that was cited as the main reason for the Crimean War. However, it obviously wasn't. There was, decades of European political turmoil. Well, not turmoil. European sort of geopolitical relations. So you have, I've forgotten who said it, but the quote that the Crimean War was fought not for the Eastern question, but for Europe. About how they wanted to maintain the balance of power. So you have all of these, you've named all these wars and say, oh, they were caused by religion. But no, they were caused by other things, just religion was a factor that
was
led to
it.
It was a factor
that caused these negative
things. Also, I admit you can say religion was responsible for the Crusades, but in no way were they, in any shape or form, representing what Christianity should look like or the example that Jesus set out to Christianity. A lot of people claim they did. But I don't think you can say, and I would refute strongly, you're more than welcome to try, but I would refute very strongly if you were to say that the Crusades were biblical or representative of an ideal form of Christianity.
I think an argument like this is difficult because for me, I'm looking in from the outside, I'm not religious at all. When I see two people who both say they're Christian, I don't know enough about the inner workings of Christianity to be able to make sort of proper judgment on the validity of them being a Christian. So if some person says, oh, I'm a Christian, I'm going to go invade the Middle East because of my Christianity, and some person says, I'm a Christian, I'm going to go and help at my local community church because I'm a Christian and that's what I do with my beliefs. I obviously prefer the one who would go and help at the community, but I have no way of knowing whether the religion itself, because we know humans are very good at reading very different things from the same thing. If someone reads the Bible and takes it to mean they should invade the Middle East, even if they're not necessarily a valid quote-unquote, because I don't know, read of it, I would assume you'd say it wouldn't be.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, and I assume that would be the general opinion against it. But even so, if that was the thing that inspired them, however wrong, then I think you can probably still lay the blame, partially at least, with the religion. It is still the religion that is pushing for that to happen.
Okay, and what I'm saying is that religion throughout history has done enough positive to outweigh that.
Okay, fair enough. Couldn't you
there goes the Crusades argument. What, yeah. Next?
No, I think you can't just dismiss religion as a factor for wars. I'm more talking to Max. But
Okay.
Especially with Islam and Christianity, these are religions that attempt to convert people, more so than other religions. Islam and Christianity, most people in that religion believed that the world would be better off if everyone was their religion. And this has led to expansion everywhere, and people sending missionaries everywhere to try and convert as many people as possible to their religion.
He's going
to
bring up North Sentinel Island, isn't he?
I'm not going to bring up the North Sentinel Island, but it's involved sending armies as well to back up these missionaries, because these people believe that everyone in the world should belong to their religion.
Another side impact of that is the fact that both religions are intensely involved in community work and charity work and donations. the amount, so Islamic finance in 2015 amounted to, guess how much the value of Islamic donation by Muslims valued in 2015?
At least a bit.
Give me a number. Imagine everyone giving 2.5% of their income plus extra donations.
Well, I mean, I'd just like to say you said last year and it's using a quote from 2015. Or a source.
Did I? Yeah, oh, my bad. 2015. Okay.
So, let's do the maths. 1.6 billion Muslims. I'm going to guess that if each of them pays 5% of their yearly income...
2.5%.
But which is Zakat, which is 12.5%, I believe.
Yeah, but they're not all going to pay.
But anyway, I'll just say 5% for rounding.
Okay.
Can we just skip this and get Theo to tell us the right answer?
$2 trillion. What's the value? And that's The Guardian. The Guardian, $2 trillion was the value Islamic donations and finance in 2015.
That's a lot of money.
That's a huge amount
of
money. It
is, and there are
Max is jumping on my point.
I'm agreeing. Generally, other things saying that religious people donate more money. Like, yes, it may not be true for every single one, but in general, on average, religious people donate more money to charity than non-religious people do.
It's a lot of Christians will donate a tenth of their income. The biggest charities, if I were to ask you to name big charities in the UK today, exempting medical charities because they're set up with obvious motives, you know, by relatives of people who've died of cancer or heart attacks or so on. The biggest charities in the UK: Oxfam, Salvation Army, the Royal National Lifeboat Charity, Red Cross, Barnardo's, RSPCA, and Samaritans, all set up by Christians in the 1800s. The abolitionist movement, which pushed for the ending of slavery, was led by predominantly Christians. And we've talked about the fact that you've got the Islamic Golden Age, which sponsored massive intellectual and educational development because religions do expressly try for the betterment of their people. And that involves education, that involves freedom, that involves doing good things for the sake of doing good things, not because they want to feel good, not because they want to get something out of it.
I mean, okay, I'm going to... impartial host here. You say you get nothing out of it, don't they want to go to heaven or, you know, the equivalent? Don't they want to they're doing it for their gods, not out of, you know, personal belief to, not personal belief, it is personal belief, not out of the desire to do something good, you could argue in some cases.
In some cases, yeah, but a Christian...
However, then that goes on.
Are you going to let me answer your question?
No.
A Christian ideally will believe that if they commit to being saved by Jesus and they're being saved by Jesus, the amount of good works they do won't change that. That's what I believe. And so I'm going to do good things because that's what Jesus did, and that's because it's the loving thing to do, and that's because I know that the world will be a greater place if I do. So I try and be a decent person, I try and work and serve and be a little bit of Christ.
True, but then that is... this comes back to what Peter said earlier, because he's looking at his phone and not contributing to this discussion at all, about how missionaries, and they go to all these places and they try and convert people. That is solely religiously motivated. Like, okay, you cannot slightly...
No, a lot of missionaries are motivated because they believe it is a good thing for those people to believe in Jesus or believe in Allah or to be Buddhists or Hindus or Sikhs or so. I mean, obviously, those last three will have much less missionaries. But missionaries, we have this very negative view of missionaries going over to a colonial place, beating them up, forcing them to be Christian or slaves.
Well, I mean, that's we do think that for a reason,
yeah,
because this did happen.
That's true, but that's also because we like that view, because it fits in with our secular view in the West, and that's not the case. And if Peter's going to talk about his granddad, I'm going to talk about my grandparents who went to Congo as missionaries to backwater, to a place to set up a school and a clinic, for no reason other than to serve the people there. There was no money in it. They came back and they were living in my great-grandma's house in Bristol for 6 months. Like, what did they get out of that other than genuinely serving out of their hearts?
One of those things I would say about religion, it's an ideology in a way, and it's something that's very ingrained in a person. And if you truly believe it, would I be right in saying that this is sort of the single most important thing in your life if this is what you truly believe?
Yeah.
And I think that can be a great tool for good, but what I would also worry about on the flip side, if you manage to have enough people who sings like with their whole body, with everything, they truly believe that their high purpose in life means to do so, like entails doing something bad, entails causing a war, entails harming other people because they don't agree with you. It's such a powerful tool to get people to do and things and act in certain ways, whether good or bad. And I would worry that because religion is such a divisive thing at times and such a powerful thing, that you can do far more bad with it than you can do good. If we look at like wars throughout history, the number of them caused at least in part by religion, as we've said, but also things like schisms that just happen within churches. And then you suddenly have two sides that both believe that they are literally agreeing with the most powerful thing in the universe. That's a very dangerous dynamic. That really, it takes the power dynamics of two individual sort of sets of people and turns up to 100, because both cannot be wrong in their own eyes, if that makes sense. And I think that's just too dangerous in many ways to not be seen as a bad thing.
Yeah, and I can understand that, but I think you guys, again, religions, we have this idea of religion as being a global thing that should influence things on a big scale, and it's not. Like, you know, Jesus and Muhammad were individual people who sought to influence events on an individual level. If you go down to a person by person base, you will see, I'm almost certain, you will see religion doing something awesome. As I've talked about charities, I can't repeat the same statistic. I've talked about toddler groups and missionary work. That is individual people doing great things because they feel it is part of their...
How big was that figure you said that Muslims donated in 2015?
$2 trillion.
Two or three trillion?
Two.
Trillion. Well,
in 2015.
In 2015. In 2017.
Is this why you've been quiet for the last, like, 10 years? You've been trying to hum one statistic.
No, it's going up and adding together all of the GDP of every Muslim-majority country in the world.
Well, no, because people just...
People also don't only... Muslims don't also only live in Muslim-majority countries.
But also the Muslim-majority countries don't only have Muslims in.
So yeah, but also the Muslim-majority countries are likely... The Muslim-minority countries are likely to give disproportionately more of their income, because they're far richer. I'll show you the article where I got it from.
What I was going to say was the combined GDP of, in 2017, of every Muslim country in the world was only 9 trillion. So if... And you said they gave 2 trillion.
I'll show you the article. I'm not making this up.
Yeah, 2 trillion, okay. But you...
GDP of 9 trillion.
Okay.
That is not true.
Well, no, you've got to take into fact that there are Muslims living in Europe.
I'm going to take into fact that there are people in these places who aren't Muslim.
Yeah, but it's a lower...
Wait, the fundamental arithmetic of it is that how many Muslims are there in the world?
1.6 billion.
There's 1,000 billions in a trillion, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's we're not the Americans.
Yes.
So each person has to give about 1,000 a year to charity.
Yeah.
Like US dollars, I assume.
Probably, yeah. So... Yeah, so that's perfectly...
We're talking children. Most of... Sort of... A lot of poorer nations that...
Yeah.
Do not have that kind of...
Also Middle Eastern oil barons.
Yeah, who give loads because it makes them look good.
It's $1,250
right.
a year.
You've got the headline of this article is... Sorry, I've just got a limit in place. Zakat requires Muslims to donate 2.5% of their wealth. Could this end poverty? Then the subheading, estimated at almost $2 trillion in 2015, Islamic finance is often overlooked by development organisations as a potential source of funds.
Is this from individuals or from...
This may be a mix.
It said finance, so I'm not sure how charitable it is. Or if it's just like small lending, which often goes on.
A lot of it's going to be to charitable causes.
I don't know. I feel like this is a pointless.
I mean,
Which is why it's not good
time out.
Which you could lose 1 trillion of this money, and it would still be a, you know.
I think it's too big a number to be feasible by just charitable.
Well,
donations.
You're not a Guardian journalist who's done the research.
Anyway,
so you can
Theo,
just...
what was Theo talking about?
I was talking about religion as an individual, and I was onto something. You were on the run. You looked scared. No, you weren't. So when you get down to an individual level, you see religion having a really good, powerful impact. But when you get into the echo chambers and when you online and when you look at the schisms throughout history and the wars, of course you're going to think religion's a bad thing. Okay, of course you're going to come to that conclusion. But then when you focus on the individual impact of Christians and Muslims throughout history, when you think about the Buddhist Chia Kwang Duk, who burned himself to raise awareness of the dictatorship of Ngo Diem Dien in Vietnam in 1963, when you look at that, suddenly religion has a much bigger impact. We're looking at this wrong. we're looking at this as though religion should always be having a positive impact globally. And that's not fair because, as you say, it's made up of humans who get things wrong. And it's made up of humans who misinterpret it, and that's not the way it should be, but it's the way it is.
I'm going to actually play the role as an impartial host for like the first time ever, right? And say that, again, this is oversimplifying the causes of things. So with the guy in Vietnam, he didn't only burn himself because of his religion. There was, you know, the whole fact that it was a dictatorship.
No, but it was primarily to raise awareness of the fact that his fellow Buddhists were being killed by the dictator, which kind of makes it only because of his religion.
True, okay. Well, didn't know that. But the other things, like, people don't only feel good about themselves because of religion. There are examples of people feeling worse about themselves because of religion, such as some gay people in, like, extremely Christian parts of America and religious parts of the Middle East. Gay people feel very bad about themselves and can get harassed and hurt and stuff. And although, you know, you may argue that's not correct Christianity or not the kind of Christianity which you take as... that you take as gospel. how many terrible... Oh, I'm unhappy with myself for that. It may not be that form, but that is still an influence of religion. It doesn't matter if it is religion being done for private gain. It doesn't matter if it's religion with that's been interpreted wrong to agree with someone's personal vendettas against certain groups. That religion has still caused that, and religion has still had a negative impact on people.
Okay.
And also, however, kind of counter-argument to that is that it's also not positive. Never mind.
No, you're trying, Yeah.
Well, the one thing I would say is, because if we look at sort of like the Roman Empire, for an example, and we see this underbelly of sort of Christianity that was pushing towards like freeing people, there was often the religion of slaves. It was this genuine sort of progressive movement within the Roman Empire. The way I would look at that is, well, yes, of course, because something had to be, and it just happened to be Christianity. If you see oppressed people, they are going to bond with an idea, with something to hold on to that allows them to push through these difficult times.
They weren't oppressed until they became Christians.
These were people, these are slaves, these are the lowest, these are the dregs of society. If you're at the bottom of society in the Roman world, don't have a particularly nice life. You're getting, you can essentially be rolled over by everyone, you're just being pushed around, and you're in poverty. Like, poverty on a level that we in the modern world almost can't imagine. And when you have a society where millions of people are like that, something has to catch on. Humans need something to hold on to when they are in such dire straits that the material world cannot support them mentally. We are social creatures. We are built to be more than that. And I would argue that religion fills this role, not because religion is necessarily a good thing or religion is necessarily a bad thing, but because something has to, and it happens to be religion. People will hold on to anything. In this case, they held on to Christianity. At other times, they will hold on to ideological, political beliefs.
No, I dispute that, because being Christians made them in a worse off position than before, because they were persecuted, because they were burnt alive as human candles at Nero's garden parties, because they were thrown into gladiator arenas to be torn apart by lions. They became worse citizens when they were Christians than when they were in poverty. In fact, they were now Christians in poverty, which was even worse than being a slave in poverty.
When Christianity started, it was just kind of ignored, because there were hundreds of Eastern mystery religions, as they were so called. These were religions that the Romans didn't really understand. They were small things, and they just kind of popped off. They were all over the place. Christianity was the one that just sort of took hold. And in the early days, it wasn't necessarily a bad thing to be a Christian, until they started doing things like,
which is pretty quick in. So if you're not Christian, you'll believe that Jesus died and didn't come back to life. And then 40 days later, then Christians believe he did come back to life. 40 days later, he went back to heaven. Then only several months in, before Christianity starts becoming big enough in Israel and surrounding areas, they begin to attract the attention of the local religious leaders even more negatively than before. They thought they stamped it out with Jesus' death. Suddenly, they're now, these guys have come back and they're bigger and better than ever. They keep breaking out of prison. They were thrown in prison for preaching publicly, and they'll keep breaking out somehow. Whether this is angels or just luck, you know, it depends on your religious viewpoints. But they got persecuted pretty quickly. If you read the Bible, the section of the Bible where this is largely talked about, the chapters is the way you break down the sections of the Bible. It's only four chapters in
only a few pages in where they start to become persecuted and start to stand on trial for their beliefs. And the first Christian is stoned for his beliefs. Stoned as in the rocks thrown at him, not the weed sense.
Okay, I'm going to make a statement that Theo might actually strangle me for. How would you compare, say, the Christians in the Roman Empire to, say, I don't know, revolutionaries in France, or, I don't know, communists under Tsarist rule in Russia? These are people who hold onto an idea, whether or not the idea is good or bad is kind of irrelevant in this case. They hold onto an idea, they cling onto it because it is the one thing that gives them hope for a better life for themselves, for their families, for their communities, that have been crushed by this higher power. You see examples of people holding on to these political beliefs. You see, there was an Anabaptist rebellion, which is a form of very extreme Protestantism just after the Reformation in about the mid-1530s in Germany. And these were people who were sort of like proto-communists also, as well, but they were also very, very extremely religious. But they were holding on to something different. These were often the dregs of society. These were the poorest. These were the people who were stamped under, like, crushed under everything else. And they hold on to these very radical ideas, religious and secular. Why? I'm just not sure why I would attribute all of this benefit the religion has from these places, like, oh, Christianity worked for the people. Well, yes, but so would have created Christianity to work for them. They could have created anything else. Christianity didn't necessarily have to do it. It didn't have to be religion.
It's a fairly simple response, and it's a two-part question to you. Where are the French revolutionaries today? Where are the Tsarists today? The French revolutionaries were around 200 years ago. What about them? They held on to their beliefs.
I mean,
did France become an empire under the rule of Napoleon not 10 years later?
The start of French radicalism is the basis of through which we see a lot of these ideas of liberalism, these ideas of...
Okay, so where are the Tsarists? What happened to the people who want a monarchist rule of Russia?
No, we're talking about the opposite. We're talking about the people who fought against them.
Yes. The communists.
And there are at least 1.4 billion communists in China, pretty well.
Of which 80 million are Christians and growing. They're now the underclass of the underclass.
I think what's more relevant is you just talk about extremism and like radical. So all radical beliefs are, in my opinion, generally bad, and they're often political, but often nationalist. But religion allows for another axis of radicalization to happen. So there have been like terrorist attacks at like the Lord's Christian Army, Al-Qaeda, Taliban. These people have committed atrocities in the name of religion because their interpretation of religion says that this is acceptable and says that this must be done. All, like most beliefs, like political or national, have a radical element to them. And religion just allows another radical element to exist, which is bad.
And that's a really good point, I think, because with the point of wars, you can obviously claim there are other causes. However, religious extremism, there is really only one cause.
You told me the other day, quite literally, you have a hard-on for democracy. Is this true?
I like democracy.
Would you say you like liberal democracy?
I'd like liberal democracy.
And obviously, and would you say that liberal democracy came into being largely during the Age of Enlightenment in the 1500s? Or the ideas of liberalism and civil rights and so on. Then you had democracy in the United States in the 1700s. So, could you say that Jesus was talking about liberal democracy 1,600 years before then?
Lots of people probably did. It's just we have written down what Jesus said.
Yeah, and which is
Diogenes
why. So therefore,
said
has
stuff
Christ-
like that.
So therefore, has Christianity led to the basis of liberal democracy in the West?
I won't say it hasn't.
However,
I feel that's not massively relevant.
I feel it's pretty relevant. Has religion had a positive impact on society? You're saying that liberal democracy is one of the best forms of government. Christianity, therefore, liberal democracy.
No, because Christianity also promoted monarchies and absolute monarchies by saying that God gave power to the king.
But he also said that while you're on earth, you should be subservient to the state as long as it didn't conflict with your beliefs as a Christian.
I feel like democracy sort of happened anyway. I just think that something else would have caused democracy.
I think you get these basic ideas of civil equality and that pervade through the feudalism, and through you have educated people who study the Bible and see democracy and see equality and see what love looks like when you put it in a framework of government, and then why a lot of the Americans who propagated the Revolutionary War were of a Christian background. George Washington was pretty...
But three of them had slaves.
Like
I'm not going to deny it, but that is detracting from the main point. Okay, many of them did believe in Christianity and did believe in liberal democracy, and you could equate the Christianity...
But for instance, if you look at the United States, this is quite a good example. They wrote in the Constitution, and they wrote, you see letters to each other, this is no way a Christian state. This is a purely secular organisation. This was the separation of church and state in the Americas was like a major push forward, I think, in the way that countries started to develop. They started to separate church and state, and they started to have them as two separate entities, rather than this single intertwined thing. And that, in my opinion, was a benefit for all of us.
Are you sure? What? Because I think the church's influence on East Germany may have been one reason why the Berlin Wall came down, Germany reunified. For instance, it was a prayer meeting in Leipzig which inspired protests, which inspired attacks on the wall. You have 300,000 people marching through the city of Leipzig, and because the church is respected by the state and there's one organisation left, it can't be attacked. And the protesters can't be shot because it stems from a church-sponsored organisation. And, you know, a couple of months later, the Berlin Wall comes down and Germany is reunified. And it is directly... So church and state being split is not necessarily an amazing thing.
I mean, I think I would argue it's almost overwhelmingly a good thing. If we look at the countries with effectively separated church and state, so, for instance, we live in a country that's not... Church and state are actually intertwined.
But
they're not really. Like, effectively, they might as well be separate institutions.
Compared to Saudi Arabia or, like, a theocracy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So if we compare us to, say, a theocracy, I think we're all better off in almost every case. And I think by taking out the element of you have to believe what we believe in terms of religion out of the government is infinitely better for the people.
Yes.
What makes you think that?
Because if we look at the Middle East, and if we look at any of the very... Or we look at Iran, for instance, after the revolution... If you put religious belief, if you put religion at the centre of government, you get very conservative, very old way of thinking pushing into the government. You very rarely get a society that's very religious and very progressive. That's rare.
Back at history when Europe was much more religiously focused. As Peter said earlier, Galileo, you know, burnt alive by the church. You know, and generally, lots of people, there's limits of ideas because of living under an oppressive church.
I mean, the church can be a very oppressive organisation, yeah, because if you believe that this one thing is the absolute truth and nothing else is, and anything else is heresy, then you have the ultimate sort of, the ultimate motivation to protect this one single thing and not let anything else develop and crush anything else.
What about the fact that in Congo, the church's influence on the state has meant that it regulates elections and that it's able to stop the state from shooting citizens when they protest against the government.
I have no particular...
I mean, that's an example of state and church being very closely linked and the church using its influence to protect the people. Or Nicaragua, where it's trying to negotiate with the dictator there to stop... Stop rolling your eyes at me.
No, it wasn't you, it was on my phone, not at you.
Yeah.
But I do have a point to say against you.
This is nice, 3-on-1.
I know, I swap sides, but that's because...
You think I haven't noticed. I think there are cases... I can see the argument against church and state, and I wouldn't say I'm particularly for it, but at the same time, the state, the church, if it's used well, and if it's true to what motivates it, or the same for Islam, if I don't know, is there an equivalent for church in Islam?
The church,
the mosque,
the ulema, I believe, is what it'd be called.
Okay, I'll just keep saying for short, and I'll say this. But I think if it's used well, and I agree, it has been used badly a lot. But you shouldn't completely separate the two, because when the church has positive influence over the state, it is positive and it has a big impact on the lives of people.
However, I think this is a fundamental problem that lots of people have of the merging of morals and beliefs, and how your morals do not always come from your religion. You have atheists who have good morals, you have atheists who do good things, who do charity work. Just because a church may do good actions, you know, provide help for the poor, you know, regulate elections, like you were saying in the Congo, its religion may not be the only... It's not the only cause. There are lots of other causes of it. You cannot say that the only reason why they want this is because of their religion.
Well, what other reason would you say it is?
Being a decent human being. For example, I would like democratic elections in Africa.
Are you prepared to fly out to Congo and sponsor them?
Well, no, because I'm 18.
Well, yeah.
True, I'll admit it does definitely help in those cases. However, it's not only religion that makes people want that. It's a thing that you hear a lot about if an argument against atheism is how, if you're not trying to go to heaven, what makes you want to do good things? It's because humans are inherently good.
Oh, yeah.
And that is not caused by religion, that is just human nature to want to help others.
But religion gets lots of good humans together and means that they can act as a group of people rather than a few individuals having a minimal impact. It's why bigger organisations have a bigger impact. If you come together as a religion, you can apply pressure to the state, or you can apply pressure to groups of people in society rather than, you know, making a Facebook group about it.
True. And with that, Will, like, you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, this is my attitude to, like, for instance, religious governments, is if we have two identical candidates, one is religious, one's not, I would vote for the non-religious one, simply because it's the idea that someone in government has something other than, in what in my opinion is the real kind of, like, I only see what is in the material world. Like, that's, I don't believe there is anything else. And if I think someone's motivations aren't necessarily based 100% on evidence in that real world, that's a reason for me not to support them. That's a reason, because if you start at a conclusion that isn't, I don't know, necessarily correct, I don't know, because it might be, it might not be, I have no way of knowing, but in my opinion, it's not what I see, then you can get to places that aren't necessarily a good thing. And I think that's dangerous and can be used to justify horrendous things, as well as justifying good things. It works both ways, but I think that's, in my opinion, dangerous and something that I would not support.
And with that, because I'm pretty sure this is going to keep going around in circles and circles, and it's going to get pretty heated, because I reckon Theo and Will could go on about this for ages, and I argue both sides, so I won this argument, is what we can all discern. But other than that, we haven't really come to a conclusion, have we?
No, we never do.
No. But anyway,
do conclusion statements?
Go around one sentence, concluding statement, and it will be one sentence, only one. Will?
Religion is a tool, and therefore depends on who's using it.
Religion promotes conservatism, and conservatism is bad in society.
65% of Nobel laureates in the 20th century were Christians.
Religion has overall had positive impact through the building of society. However, there are other severely negative things, but I reckon the net outcome is positive.
Yeah, because you were arguing so in favour of religion throughout that.
I was at the start. Thank you for listening to this episode. So if you want to get in contact with us, the email is
poorlyinformeddiscussion@gmail.com,
and the Instagram and Twitter is
podcastpoorly.
Well done, @podcastpoorly. So thank you very much for listening, and we hope you listen to the next episode.
Also, I hope you enjoyed our independence group, the independence group podcast. It looks like they might be forming a political party too, so that is very interesting. We're going to be keeping an eye on that as developments happen.
Goodbye.